Ahoy, you're listening to Diffuse Tap with Kenny Estes and Isla Krem. Today we are joined by Zev Shimko, the co-founder at Custodia Bank. We're going to be talking about why banks set up a master account with the Fed, why they're so important, and why they're not available to fintechs. Enjoy. All right, welcome back one and all. As always, I hope you met interesting folks in the breakout room. If this is your first time here, and I do see some new faces, you're probably confused to what the hell is going on. So here's what's on tap. This is a weekly event every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central. This is the 197th time. Isla, we're almost on 200. What are we doing for 200? I'm excited. But either way, we're going to briefly talk about Diffuse Tap and Diffuse Funds, and then we're going to have a fireside chat with Mr. Shimko. He's going to share some of his knowledge for all of you. And then we're going to do two rounds of tap rooms, kind of similar to what you just did, because this event is mostly networking. 45 minutes of every hour is spent in small groups of four, five, six, something like that. Give you a chance to meet other alternative investors with a pretty heavy focus on crypto, kind of rapid speed dating style-esque. We do want you to learn a little bit, which is why we have folks like Mr. Shimko to share some of his wisdom. If you like the networking aspect, we also do in-person versions of this around the world. Pick an ambassador in a particular city, and they kind of organize a bar and drinks. So March 14th in London, if you're in that neck of the woods, check it out. Also, thank you, Randall, for reminding me. I am going to be doing a talk on structured products this evening in Chicago. And I think there's a reception afterwards. So if you're in Chicago, want to learn a bit about structured products and maybe have a drink or two, come on down. We'll see what we can make happen. Diffuse Funds is the platform putting this on. We're a fund incubator. The big push right now is our Diffuse Digital 30 product. This is, think of it as the S&P 500 for crypto. Not an ETF. It is an index fund, but it's pretty dang close and has a lot of what you want to get easy, diversified exposure to crypto. A lot of the institutions are just now piling into Bitcoin. We think we're about a year or two ahead of that. So let us know if you want to learn a little bit more about that. That's enough about us. Mr. Shimko, thank you so much for joining us here today. You want to unmute yourself, tell the good folks a bit about your background and what you're up to over at Custodia.
Great. Hey, good morning, everybody. Apologies for the slightly raspy voice. I've got the never-ending daycare cold, so hope to be over that soon. My name is Zev Shimko. I'm the co-founder of Custodia Bank. We are building a bank to support the digital asset industry. It is the number one problem this industry has been facing over the last few years. A bit about my background, graduated from Northeastern University, went into the traditional investment banking route, worked there for a few years in both debt and equity capital markets. It's actually where I originally met my co-founder, Caitlin Long, who is seen as one of the leading advocates for digital assets, especially on the institutional side. Brilliant woman, and very lucky to have her leading Custodia Bank. I then got curious about the startup side, moved out to San Francisco. One of the companies perhaps worth mentioning is Upstart. I joined Upstart as the lead for the capital markets side of the business. They're an online marketplace lending company. This was before they really hit it out of the park and grew to $30 billion in market cap, but was a fantastic experience nonetheless. Did that at a couple other companies before going full-time into crypto in 2018, for a company called Salt Lending, was the first company in the US to lend against Bitcoin, providing dollars for Bitcoin as collateral. I thought that was, you know, an amazing idea. You really, for the first time, had a perfect form of collateral where you didn't need to repossess a car or a home. You had control of that Bitcoin that you had the ability to sell instantly should there be a margin call or liquidation. Worked with Mike Cagney for a bit at Figure Technologies, which is also responsible for the Provenance blockchain, before joining Caitlin in early 2020. So we have been building Custodia Bank for 4 years now. We built a bank from scratch under Wyoming Special Purpose Depository Institution rules. And we've certainly faced our fair share of challenges, our fair share of regulatory pressure, our fair share of uphill battles over the last couple of years, but excited to say that we launched the bank last year. We have a few services across Bitcoin custody, money markets, and banking services, and really focused on building that consumer and customer base this year. I will also note one thing, can't talk too much about it today, unfortunately. We also sued the Federal Reserve for direct access to a master account. That case is still pending, but we are likely to get an answer in the next couple weeks, which is exciting. So won't give my sense on where that's going to land. There is publicly available information there, but we are trying to be the first crypto native company with direct access to Federal Reserve payment system that will solve the bank issue for this industry.
Fascinating. And we are talking about master accounts today, so that's timely, and we'll carefully navigate that minefield apparently. But to start things off, framing, if you could please. Last 2 years has been kind of dead. There's been a lot of upset, I guess, maybe is the right word, generous word for that. So how has this kind of played out in the crypto banking space? Like what's the status quo look like?
Yeah, 2022 and 23 was tough, right? I mean, we saw Silvergate and Signature and SVB have their issues respectively. We saw massive layoffs from tech companies and digital asset companies. And to be quite frank, it didn't feel great at times, right? It wasn't clear, you know, how this industry was going to get reliable banking. The banks that felt like safe banks no longer existed, right? And so there was this kind of run to safety with some of the G-SIBs. But of course, many of those institutions do not
G-SIB, that's a term.
Globally systemic important financial institutions, large investment banks. Think of your JP Morgans, your UBSs of the world, your Citibanks. The issue there is that at the end of the day, all banks in the US, right, all but a handful of banks, including Custodia, report to the same federal regulators, right? And so if you're having broad regulatory pressure on banking, every bank is going to feel that. So yes, if you lose one banking partner, you can find another. But this is why, for example, large crypto companies have dozens of bank partners. That's not a normal thing. Normally you have one strong bank partner, maybe two. Crypto companies have dozens, and that includes the public crypto companies that you all know. And that's because of the risk of debanking in the space. So it was a tough couple years. I mean, we like to say that we survived through that bear market. You know, we were lucky not to have to do any sort of big reductions in force, right? And we really kept expenses low to ensure that we can come out of that period strong. And so I would say that, look, personal opinion, it's starting to feel like the beginning of 21 again, which was certainly a healthier time in the market. We're seeing Bitcoin near, you know, all-time highs again. Right. It's feeling good. And we have the halving coming up as well. And the institutional interest is pouring in. Right. I mean, 13 ETFs created in the beginning of the year. I think it's the fastest. I just saw a stat, the fastest ETF industry that got to 10 billion in assets ever. I mean, we're seeing the interest. We're seeing the demand. We still haven't quite solved as an industry the banking issue. Right. That's what we're trying to do. And that's what we've been forcing with this lawsuit. So if we can figure that piece out. Right now, we work with bank partners. We're hoping to get our own master accounts and give crypto companies reliable banking partners, safe services, banks that will not, you know, fold due to leverage. One fact I'll just mention about our type of bank charter, which is new, we are a full reserve bank. We are non-leveraged. Hypothetically, we should be able to withstand a 100% run on the bank. If you're providing services in and around the digital asset industry, we do not believe that you can do that as a fractional lending entity. So we are a full reserve bank. We don't have leverage anywhere in our model. And we want to provide safe base layer services to digital asset companies.
That is really interesting. I actually didn't realize that. Full reserve. Now, was that a choice of the bank, or was that kind of the Fed didn't let you get to that level without, you know, doing that just so they can make themselves feel comfortable?
The Wyoming charter is a full reserve charter, so we are prohibited from lending dollars. Now, part of the reason for that is that we are not FDIC insured. Mm. FDIC insurance generally protects a bank from that fractional lending program, so yep. Really, I would argue, is irrelevant in a full reserve model. And the FDIC has been really the most anti-crypto regulator historically and likely, you know, today as well. Sure. Again, we are trying to build durable banking. We do not care about, you know, we don't want to build a mortgage business, right? We don't want to provide warehouse lending facilities, yep. Right? You know, the only way to truly provide banking in a counterparty risk-free or minimal counterparty risk is to be a full reserve institution.
Understood. So Chris preempted my question in the chat there. By the way, if anybody has any questions, chuck them in the chat. That's hard to say. How do you make money? If you ain't lending this out, how does that work? Is it straight fees?
Great question. I had that question from an investor this morning. It is fee-based, right? So like, you know, the revenue side of the equation is more like a tech company or a fintech. We charge fees for our products and services. We're building technology. We're building things like APIs. Then SaaS fees will come into play. So we actually look more like a fintech or tech company from the revenue side of the business. Obviously, the bank and regulatory piece is incredibly important for our own standing and the protections that we can provide customers alongside the potential direct access to our own master account.
Okay. So fee-based, no lending, makes sense. You mentioned you don't have the FDIC, I guess insurance, we'll call it that. What other insurance do you have in place to kind of cover that stopgap, or is it just purely 100% reserve? It's just there as full collateral.
So on the dollar side, that is the answer. It's 100% reserve and there is full collateral. On the Bitcoin custody side, and this is really industry standard, we have a small base insurance policy that is pro rata for all of our customers. But if a customer wanted to purchase additional insurance as a dedicated limit, they would have the ability to do that, right? And so we're taking out the concept really of counterparty risk. There is still, to your point, there is operational risk, right? I mean, we do want, especially on the Bitcoin custody side, our customers are doing a lot of diligence on us. We're going through a lot of internal and external audits. We're going through pen tests. I mean, we're going through regulatory exams. We are a bank at the end of the day, and that makes people comfortable, but they're still doing their diligence. So yes, there is a concept of operational risk. You can't really ever fully protect from that. We've got your typical insurance policies, but we do not have something that is analogous to FDIC insurance on the dollar side, again, because we don't lend.
Okay. I tell you, this is the most active I've seen the chat as far as how you actually work as a company. So this is right up your alley. Question from Alec. How does the custody actually work? Is there wallet based so you can use Custodia to move from one wallet to another wallet and do blockchain transactional services?
So that's correct. We have an institutionally focused offering on the Bitcoin custody side. The differentiated aspect of that is that it is a truly segregated offering down to the UTXOs. So the unspent transaction outputs of a Bitcoin transaction, the UTXOs for Custodia are not fungible between customers. Meaning if you, Kenny, deposit 100 Bitcoin and then you make a withdrawal request later on, you are getting a portion of that 100 Bitcoin that was deposited. And that is unique for an institutionally focused platform. We have the ability to do some really cool things like UTXO management and actually extracting individual UTXOs, which we're working on. We can get into that if there's interest, but it is wallet-based. It is segregated on-chain. Everything is visible to the customers. And also what a lot of people don't realize is that Wyoming has spent a lot of time working on the charter and related custody rules. So if you type in Wyoming custody rules in Google, you'll actually find the multi-hundred page manual for how banks are required to operate custody as a Wyoming SPDI for short, special purpose depository institution. We don't do things like, you know, proof of balance and control just because we want to, and it's good market practice. We're actually required to do that under Wyoming law. And so when you think about, you know, some of the reasons why some of the custodians have blown up over the last couple of years, or maybe they're rehypothecating, or maybe you can't see the assets on chain, that can't happen with Custodia. Rehypothecation of securities and Bitcoin is actually illegal in the state of Wyoming, right? We are required to do proof of not only ownership, but also control for our regulators and our customers. And again, it's not just because we want to do it, we have to do it. So it really is a very safe, institutionally focused Bitcoin custody platform. We built the guts of it in-house. We did not partner for the core custody infrastructure. And we're starting to onboard some very large customers on that side of the house. It's not a hot wallet solution, right? It's not being used by high frequency traders, right? This is more akin to a cold wallet solution where it is, for example, once a day withdrawals. Most of our customers are long only, right? They want a safe place to hold Bitcoin. They're not looking for immediate withdrawals because obviously if you think about the relation between, you know, security and speed, I mean, that's always a trade-off and we are certainly prioritizing security.
Gotcha. There are a gazillion questions and I'm going to ignore them for a second and talk about the topic of the day, which is master accounts. First off, what is a master account with the Fed?
Great. And maybe what I'll say as well, I noticed a bunch of messages. My email just is zev@custodiabank.com. So if I don't get to you, not because I don't want to, I just can't scroll through the page.
He is smooth, Isla. Smooth, I tell you.
Well, great. Yeah, and then the next step is to actually reply to them, right? So sorry, right, Kenny, do you mind just repeating that question real quick?
Master accounts, you mentioned at the top.
Yes.
What are they? Just to frame things a little bit.
Yeah, so fundamentally, a master account is effectively a bank's bank account at the Fed. It's how money actually moves between banks. When you send a Fed wire transaction, money moves from one master account to another master account. Right? It does not stay in the same master account unless you are moving or sending funds to another customer of the bank. Now, only depository institutions in the US have the ability to access master accounts. In other countries, that's actually not the case. You can be a fintech company, for example, in the UK, have an e-money license and get access to the Bank of England payment system. Mm-hmm. The US has really locked down that process, which is why all fintechs that you're familiar with, whether they're lending companies like LendingClub or Prosper or challenger banks like Chime, they have to work with other banks. They do not have their own master account, right? And so they typically, well, in all cases, have a bank partner behind them. And that bank is responsible for actually facilitating all of the payments that they are providing to their customers. Now, you might ask, well, is that an issue? Does that cause concern? You know, the short answer is yes, because the fintech does not maintain control over the entirety of their program, right? And so what happens when your bank partner says, we reviewed our internal policies, we're making a change, you know, we don't want to support the sports industry anymore, and you have 25% of your customers in the sports industry, right? Or the gaming industry. That is not up to the fintech. That is entirely up to the bank. And so you're seeing a lot of fintechs have to pivot and change and adjust how they're offering products and services just to meet the requirements of their bank partner. Further, you know, banks are under different regulatory environments, right? And so I made a comment before where banks roll up to, you know, the same regulators. You can be a state bank, you can be a federal institution, you can roll up to the FDIC, the OCC, or the Fed, right? But they're getting similar pressures coming down. And we've seen that quite a bit in the digital asset industry. I've never seen an industry like this where there's been so much debanking in the space. I mean, we hear this day in and day out from prospective customers where they say, we lost our bank account. My bank closed my account because I received a wire from Coinbase. You know, my bank closed the account because they realized that we're in business with a crypto miner, right? It's just a very sensitive topic right now, and not necessarily because of the bank's own stance, right? And in some cases, that's the case, but it really is the regulatory pressure, you know, coming down to them specifically. And so you're just seeing a lot of these crypto companies losing accounts. You're seeing a lot of crypto companies going abroad for that reason. I mean, what does that do to jobs? Not that that's the point of this conversation, but it's very difficult if you don't control the payment side because the bank has the oversight over your program. And so look, we're actually on that side of the business, which is a third of our business. We work with partner banks. We have good partners to settle our payments, but things can change. Right. And so we want our own master account at the Fed so that we have the full oversight over that flow. We can choose what products and services to provide. We can choose which customers within the digital asset industry we want to support, et cetera. So if you don't have that control, it's very, very difficult. And startups have failed because of it. If you don't have a bank in the US and you're a US company, you really can't operate, right? You can't pay your employees. You can't pay your vendors, right? You either go abroad or you fold.
It's funny, I mentioned we have the Diffuse Digital 30, which is a publicly listed, like FINRA approved index fund, 3-4 years running. For about a 9-month period, we did not have a bank account. We couldn't physically open
it. Yeah, so it hits home.
That's terrible. Yeah, absolutely horrendous. So you have a master account, you have it with the Fed. Does that also open up FDIC insurance for you, or is that a separate process entirely?
So technically, Wyoming Speedy Banks are eligible to apply for FDIC insurance. So we can choose whether or not we want to, and we actually have applied in the past, but it really is a question as to whether or not it makes sense for the business. You have to pay as a bank, you have to pay for FDIC insurance, right? And so would we be willing, for example, to pay 5, 10, 15, 20 basis points for that coverage if we are a non-lending bank? Our plan with a master account is actually quite simple. Hold $1.08 for every dollar on deposit in the master account and do not touch it, right? So that we could literally withstand a 100% run on the bank. The average, you know, I would say, reserve that banks operate with, 8%, 9%, 10%. Yep. I mean, we are looking at 108%, right? It is flipping the model on its head. And it's because we're not focused on lending. We're focused on payments. We're focused on velocity of payments. We're focused on being a low risk counterparty. We recognize as a new bank, it's going to be very hard. If we were a fractional lending entity, how do we stand up to the counterparty risk of a G-SIB, right? A JP Morgan, a UBS, a Citi, right? The only way to really stand up to that is to be a full reserve institution, to be able to withstand 100% run. You can't hold 10% of, you know, dollars against assets if your deposits are in the digital asset industry and can all, you know, leave the bank in a matter of 10, 15 minutes, right? I mean, we're in a different paradigm when it comes to digital assets and banking, and we just want to do that in a hyper safe way. And so look, is it possible that you can do some lending in the future? You can lend digital assets? Yes, but we want to get the fundamental base layer done first before we talk about some of the, you know, I would say more complex products.
Okay. That makes that's a very conservative approach, and candidly, especially after what we saw with Signature and SVB. Unfortunately though, we are at the top of the half hour, so we are going to pop into breakout rooms. I do feel slightly more intelligent, so thank you, Zev, for sharing some of your insight.
I feel less, so I think I just transferred some over.
Brilliant. We're all brilliant. So tap room time. We're going to pop you in a room. Some etiquette things. One, networking, not pitching. Please be kind to one another. We do not, for privacy reasons, do a full participant list. If you meet somebody you want to connect with, just, I don't know, swap emails, right? Or join our Telegram group. Pretty lively. A lot of people give you a good chance to connect with everybody you see here and just kind of share what's going on in your life or interesting opportunities that come across your plate. Tap rooms, generally, you kind of do a quick round of introducing yourselves and then discuss the topic for 10-ish minutes. That topic being whatever Isla tells you it is. Isla, what is that?
And the topic is, what does a bank would have to provide to you as a crypto company for you to be thrilled to be working with them? Is it this type of, you know, no lending, we're not going to shut down type of model? Or are you looking for, you know, the JP Morgan's, you know, whatever crypto bank that might be that they might launch in the future? What would the trappings of a bank be that you'd love to work with if you were a crypto company? I'll pop you into rooms now, and we'll see you back here in about 10 minutes.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope you had good conversations. We did a really good job of staying on topic by mostly talking about aliens. So yeah, we nailed that one, but it's always interesting. But as threatened, Mr. Shimko, you now need to unmute and tell us the future.
All right, so I'll keep it non-alien because that's a separate conversation.
that's the present, apparently.
Yeah, this isn't my, you know, I would say idea necessarily, but I certainly agree with it. I think with the proliferation of AI, more advanced machine learning, probably within the next 10 years, we'll be required to have universal basic income. There are just going to be so many people without the ability to have decent jobs. I think, you know, there's not enough that AI won't be able to do. So I think we will need some level of UBI probably in the next 10 years or so.
Does that happen in the US without a revolution?
Oh, gosh. Can I say I don't know? I'm not sure, right? I mean, I think if we see it coming over a long enough period, I think there'll be the right regulation in place there. I just, what's the alternative if you don't have it and you've got 25% of the workforce unable to make a living for themselves? I mean, that in and of itself is a revolution, probably.
That's fair. That's a lot of people that are hungry and angry. So yeah, interesting. Isla, did we fill enough air for you?
Yeah, we certainly did. And we've reshuffled all of the rooms. And the final question is, maybe we'll go a little bit off topic here. What do you think is going to happen to this banking situation as Bitcoin shoots upwards? Are more people going to go into banking and try to set up a bank of their own for crypto? Or is it going to be kind of touch and go for several years until people have the cojones to get into this space? I'll pop you into rooms now, and we'll see you back here just before the top of the hour.
All right, everybody. Welcome back, one and all. Here is the speaker, Mr. Shimko, who's been educating you. So please, sir, plug your pluggables. How can people find you? Where do you want them to go now that they've heard your sultry tones?
Great. So of course, as mentioned earlier, please feel free to reach out via email. We'll do my best to respond. We also have a generic info at custodianbank.com. A quick note on our customers. So we only serve businesses, not consumers. And we're in about 30, 31 states right now, getting more states by the day and by the week. And if you want to see a map of the states that we're serving, you can see that on our website as well. So feel free to reach out. You know, I'm a little old school. I like LinkedIn. I'm not as active on Twitter and then some of the other platforms. You know, please send me a connection. We'd love to learn more about what you're up to.
Amazing. Well, thank you again for sharing some of your wisdom. A couple housekeeping or wrap-up items on our end. This is a weekly event, Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central. Next week, we're going to be talking about hiring in a crypto bull market, which we are now defining. We're in a bull market, which is deciding that's happening. Diffuse Tap in person, March 14th. And also, if you're in Chicago tonight, you can see me doing a panel of some flavor about structured products. The link is in the chat. Let me see if I have another copy of it. Oh, yeah, it's right there in the chat again. So come on down, check it out. Telegram, join it. Say hello, introduce yourselves, connect with everybody else. And otherwise, hell, that's it, right? Did I miss anything?
That's it. Yes, that is it. And we will see you all next week again.
All right. Thank you again, Zev, for sharing your wisdom and everybody else for coming out and meeting one another. It does not work without you.
Thanks, all. Pleasure.
Just a reminder that we have to sprint forward on Sunday.
Time zones? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Good to know. Yeah.
I do whatever my watch tells me in the morning, so hopefully that changes and we're good to go.
Yeah, my phone's really good about getting that one picked up. Yeah.
Thanks, everyone. Pleasure.
All right, thank you again, Zev. Cheers. Bye.
That's all, folks. Hope you learned something new. If you join us on Zoom every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central, you can also network with other fascinating alternative investors from all over the world in small groups of 4 or 5. Learn more on our website at www.diffusefunds.com. Until next time.